Saca plus. Hello and welcome to IndieCast episode number 250. Wow, episode. I'm your host Aditya, and along with me I have my friend and host Abhishek.
Hello everyone. For those who have heard our previous episode where Aditya's son corrected him, apparently that I'm not just a co-host, I'm a host as well. But 250, man. 250. It's taken us a while to get here. We started when you were in the US, then Japan, then Canada. Now it's morning there. You resemble someone who is working with Apple, and I'm a Microsoft guy with formals on as we record this on a video.
Because it's a long weekend.
Oh, right.
Because it was Easter, etc. So we had Friday off, and then now Monday as well, because Easter was on a Sunday. So chutti to dena mangta na.
Oh, aisa hai. That's why, not bad.
That's why there is an interesting topic, and we should talk about that sometime, is how the Canadian press is reporting on how Canada has one of the lowest productivities in the G7, and how that is impacting overall. So that's an interesting topic to talk about at some point.
Yes. And talking about productivity, we've got our first topic circling around productivity of the younger lot. Let's get on with
it. Yes, Florida, Ron DeSantis, governor of Florida, has introduced a bill which is going to basically be banning social media for kids under 14, and those between 14 and 15, their parents are going to have to consent to it.
Yes, it's not a law yet, but a bill which is first of its kind, I guess. There are a few countries who have tried doing this. India also did this, Karnataka High Court. And this is what Justice Narendra, he said, ban social media. I will tell you, a lot of good will come. Today's children are so addicted to it. I think there should be an age limit, just like there are for excise rules. This happened in September, and it's bad. When I started reading about how kids are hooked to these devices, It is legendary, in that there are videos online which talk about how people, when they take the mobile phone away from the kid, that kid goes completely dulali. And that kid could be a 3-year-old or a 15-year-old.
So the bill will get implemented from January 1st, 2025. And by the way, more than 30 states have tried to introduce something like this, but it has always gone to the court and then it has been scrapped, citing First Amendment privileges, etc. US may. Lekin, what it basically says is that any platform where users can upload content or see content uploaded by others, and the 10% or more daily active users who are younger than 16 spend an average of 2 hours a day or longer, sites that use algorithms to analyze user data and then provide more information and then provides more content, and then any site that implements features like infinite scrolling, push notifications, displaying user likes, shared, repost metrics, videos that play without users clicking on it, and live streaming. They are subject to these laws and need to get permission. So who falls under? Anyone who is less than 14 years of age cannot get access. And between 14 and 15, they have to do age verification, and their parents have to consent before you can get access to it. Yeah. And anyone, also part of the deal is anyone who wants to delete the platform has to comply with the request within 10 days. And there are a few other things that they have listed on things like data usage, etc. That they have listed. Interestingly, 4 school district boards in Canada, in Ontario, including Toronto, they have also just taken these media companies to the court, citing that they have rewired students' brains and the school boards have been left to deal with the outcomes of this.
Amazing. And my goodness. That's the part that you talked about, rewired students' brains. That is very important neurologically. There was a point blank we did with one Dr. Anna Lemke, which we talked about previously. She is a psychiatrist at Stanford, and she talks about these games. If you expose kids to technology too soon, then your normal physical intimacy, that part of the brain does not develop, and you are rupturing that way too soon.
Yeah, that's terrible. That's terrible. Yeah, because clearly then now you're wiring this kid's brain to sort of link eating with watching this potent screen at a very young age. So this is very bad. And really shouldn't be happening. I personally believe that a child under the age of 13 should not have access to their own device. And when they do engage with a screen, it should be intermittent and modest and monitored. But yeah, I mean, it's the ultimate and best babysitter, right? Put a kid in front of a screen and you don't have to talk to them for hours at a time, but it's not good for their brains. Then you know, what's so interesting. You turn it off and the kids go crazy, right? They start screaming and kicking and yelling because they're in withdrawal. You know, there was a kid on an airplane who the battery ran out on the iPad. So the desperate parent pulled it away and had a book and gave the book to the kid. And the kid kept like pressing the book and trying to get the book to work. And in fact, what happens if you do expose your kids to lots of screen time growing up is essentially their brain gets wired around using screens as an adaptive coping mechanism. And again, it drives dopamine ultimately downward, so that then now your kid is going to be, screaming and in withdrawal when you try to take it away. You're hooking your kid on a digital drug, and that's no good. Now, again, this doesn't mean throw the baby out with the bathwater. Intermittent supervised use of watching movies or playing games or social media is all okay. But in those early years, especially that first decade, we really need to lay the groundwork for our kids learning how to communicate in real life with real people, how to do chores, how to do exercise, how to, organize themselves to do schoolwork, how to do things that are hard and difficult, so that in their teens, when we no longer have control over them and they go get their own phones and do whatever they're going to do, they at least have that foundation of knowing, both a neurological foundation and a sort of psychological, psychocultural foundation of knowing what is kind of appropriate digital etiquette.
Just earlier today, Wall Street Journal ran an interesting article. If you're a user of Snapchat, it will tell you what your position is with that of a friend in their circle, or they call it the solar system. So which means that, are you a Mercury closest to the sun, or are you a Neptune? So there are breakups that are happening because of that. For example, one boyfriend apparently noticed that he was Neptune in that solar digital orbit, and that girl had befriended a guy who was Mercury, which is, he got too mad at this. But we are making light of this, but there's some 20 million.
This is real though.
This is real. 20 yeah. million Americans use American teens specifically. So this is not even 14 and below. So 14 and about 13 and above, which is also a big problem, where you've got something called a yellow heart. And that means you're besties. And if you are a bestie for two consecutive months, you get what you call a super BFF. Now, these are things that, those who are not...
They social currency.
Social currency. Brilliant. Yeah, absolutely. We are smiling, those who are listening to us and not watching. That's because it is ludicrous for 40-year-olds who think about this. But there are companies which run on it. Our equivalent, Aditya, growing up was what was on the day of the Friendship Day. How many bands are you being tied girls or guys or whatever? That's the extent to which people said, okay, that was a friend circle that you had, whether you liked them or not. We didn't have Facebook, Twitter. But today, and these companies are also smart. Oh, by default, these features are on. So you have to opt out of it. So which means very few people would do that. The anxiety part of it comes when others are not liking your posts, or it happens even to adults. LinkedIn pay. I have done that. Because that's how the mind works. If I have posted something on LinkedIn, 3 days later, oh, okay, only 20 likes. I'm probably not a good enough post. So it does that to the brain.
In fact, this goes to the study which was done in 2023 by U.S. Surgeon General's Advisory on Social Media and Youth Mental Health. They did a study of that. And 95% of the youth in 13 to 17 said they use a social media platform, and they were... third of it said they were almost constantly on it.
Yeah.
Even worse things that happen is the teen suicide rate, etc., that have gone up as a result of all the content that is being shown there. And the algorithms, the way they work is that once they think you like some content, they show you more of it.
Yeah.
Right. People, there have been cases, and these are not made up things. There have been cases where teenagers who have committed suicide, their email accounts had content in which these, you may like these type emails showing suicide related activity, saying that you will, you may like this way of, you know how these, they generically create these things. You may like soccer, you may like this. So algorithm utha liya and they showed them all the suicide photos, driving them to do all these things further. So, and then anorexia is a big one. Eating disorders, especially among girls, is a huge problem. Right? However, then it comes back. The classic argument here is that where is the parental interference? Yeah. Where is the parental control here? Right?
And that's important because, let me ask you a question. At what age do you think a kid can get behaviorally addicted, meaning not the smoking part, about what age, like social media is one example, or screens, what age?
I've seen that happen as early as 2 or 3 with a few people who watch YouTube videos, etc.
Well, 2 or 3 years is what you mean, but according to studies, it is 2 months. That is a kid, a 2 month baby can show signs of behavioral addiction. And there is actually a study in December 1968 where 41 psychologists who studied human vision met in New York City. They found that when they dangled hard-edged moving objects in front of the babies in the kaleidoscope of different images that they go through, because for them everything is new, they figured they would get into a trance, and they figured that was the first time when kids start discerning objects and you can hook them. And I have seen parents, and well, no judgment here. The science proves that if you introduce it too soon, it might have damaging effects. But 2 months old, 5 months old, you know, if you have to feed them, you put the phone in front of them. We've discussed this in the past, but this, and it also with adults, man, if you are, this may not happen in Canada, I don't know, because more disciplined country, etc. But if you are in India, Mumbai, when you are on the fastest lane, when you're driving, when you suddenly see some guy driving slowly, and then you realize, what's the matter with him, man? The road is open. Then you know that he's, when you pass him, he's looking into the phone.
Yeah,
and that's the truth. And there is a fear of being without mobile phone contact is called something, which I didn't know until today. It's called nomophobia. Did you know that?
Really?
Yeah, because...
No mobile phobia?
Yeah, no mobile phobia. And Microsoft had done this study in 2000, and they found that the average attention span of a human being was 12 seconds in 2000. In 2013, it went down to 8 seconds, and goldfish has got a 9 seconds attention span. and they said that... I think it's the study, the next part that I'm going to say, that was done in America, 77% of those in the bracket of 18 to 24 years, they said that they reached out to their mobile phones when they had nothing to do. So there is no concept of you sitting idle. That's why that job as parents that you told, again, that is important, because if you are in a room with a kid and if you are looking into a mobile phone, they did a study by mounting cameras on these infants. They found that the infant's eyes go to your eyes because they are looking at you all the time, and
they're down.
And yes, they are down. So if they are distracted, the kid is distracted. There's a brilliant book called Irresistible by Adam Alter. He writes about all of these, where he's mentioned some of these anecdotes where he says that distracted parents cultivate distracted kids.
I mean, to be honest, I have found myself to be reaching
out. No, same here.
I consciously am realizing that I'm doing this, and yet sometimes I still go ahead and do it. It still takes me around 2 days to break that habit. If it's a weekend or extended weekend, etc., for me to just keep my and leave my phone. Otherwise, the phone is always with you. So I've switched off all the notifications, Slack notification, email notification, etc., so that I use it whenever I want to and not whenever the app wants me to.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. See, if you're a recovering alcoholic, you meaning whoever out there, you can stop yourself by going into a bar. But if you are a recovering internet addict, you still have to check your emails, man. It's all there.
I wonder if we were asked to we were only allowed to have like 5 apps or 10 apps.
Yeah, yeah.
And what would happen? And what would that selection look like? Right. And what would happen if you don't put those apps itself? Right? I've tried deleting those apps so many times.
Yeah, no.
For some the other reason it comes back.
Yeah.
The only reason I use Facebook is to get birth date notification. Sometimes I go in once a month and just check out on whose birthdays I missed and send a note, but not otherwise. You know,
this is what I've started to do, which is very ludicrous. Can you see this little box? This is the box in which I put the mobile phone. So that physically it is not in my reach.
There's a physical barrier.
That is the extent to which an adult needs to go to. But apparently that's what they say, that you have to create a barrier between you and your drug of choice, which in this case happens to be mobile phones, urge to check mobile, you know.
The thing is that now we have a 10-year-old, right? He is part of a class which is shared, which is a 5th and 6th grade. So the 6th grade kids are allowed to step out of the school. Because they're allowed to step out of the school during recess, their parents rightly give them mobile phones, because you don't know what will happen. Because they now have it. Anyone who doesn't have it is sort of out of the loop.
Yeah.
He gets left out of conversations and activities and going out sledding and all those sort of things. If I don't give him a way to communicate with his friends now, there might be other problems that may happen. Who knows?
And eventually they will. See, I think it'll probably take them 24 hours to learn technology. The idea is to keep it away from them as far as we can. And then they will know what it is to stay, what it is to live in a world without being addicted to technology. And eventually they may, just like you and me, for example.
Yeah.
But that's the best we can do now.
Yeah, and monitoring. I think monitoring as parents, one of the things that we do is we monitor his. So I have another device with his account logged in, which he doesn't know. Right.
I'm going to come to you when the day comes. Mine is 5 years old, but I'm going to come to you to know exactly how you do that. Because he will get a phone eventually.
Yeah, and I go through all the messages with his friends, etc. Yeah, there is no privacy here. Until you are, there is no privacy. Yes, just accept it.
And another thing, when you ask things to on Google, what is the most common aisa kuch likha, it auto prompts, right? At that time, it could be anything. What is the most common sexual position? Now, the kid doesn't know that. So I think I know a friend of mine who's got a 10-year-old girl. So he's told her that I am your Google. You ask me anything under the sun, but don't go there for certain reasons because it is not meant to. Of course, there are, I think, what is that?
You can put those. But once you go link hopping, you have no idea where you go.
True.
Right?
See, not... No. Sometimes not all of it is bad though. You know, gamification, they call it, right? These badges. There was this... have you ever gone to play freerice.com while getting your GRE done? Do you remember? So GRE, SATs, GMAT, people need to mug these words, CAT, CET in India. Yeah. Now, that's a chore, right? Where... Are you ratta marna padta hai. So there was this guy, a computer programmer called John Breen. His son was struggling with these words. So he put together this website called freerice.com. He was also a proponent of anti-poverty. So he said, there is a word, four alternatives. You get it right, four grains of rice for every correct answer will be donated. So he made a game out of this. I've played this back in the day and I didn't know the stats. So again, it's there in that book. On October 7th, 2007, when it was launched, he collected 830 grains of rice on that day. And in 2014, in 7 years, it raised its 100th billionth grain, which was enough to feed 5 million adults for a day. So gamification, again, this is technology.
Pretty cool.
So there are also these good addictions where you want to get the next 4 grains of rice or whatever, just for the fun of it.
Educate.
But you have these, I think it has more sinister applications than the good ones.
Yeah, and that is what I think both the lawsuits are saying, is that companies are willingly creating the apps to be so addictive that it is having a negative impact on formative brains. And that is the issue. That's what people are bringing to fore. And they don't have to deal with the side effects of it. It is, for example, the schools. So schools for social media change. Is this coalition that has been created by the 4 school districts. They are saying that the issue is that there is a massive strain on the board's funds to provide mental health programming, staff, IT cost, administration, etc. as a result of all these behavioral and learning difficulties that the kids are having. So they are left to deal with all the tough things. And not the social media companies. They are not, you know, they're just monetizing them. So that's why they are suing them for $4.5 billion. Let's see where it goes.
Yes, yes. But big subject, this man. Oh. Quite a big one.
Big one. And it's not going to be resolved anytime soon, right? So let's see what happens. In the meantime, let's move on to the next topic that we have, which is...
Did your phone just go ting right now?
I think my phone just... There you go. It's that time of the year, Abhishek.
Yes.
Every 5 years, a massive event happens. 970 million voters this time. All of them are going to be coming together in between April 19th and June 4th to elect 543 members to Lok Sabha. And I'm talking about the 6-week general election that is coming, going to happen.
Yes, and the BJP might say, why bother? Just why bother? Given the why kind bother? Of popularity.
I think I have a feeling that at this point, even the opposition is saying, why bother? Right?
Oh, boy.
Isn't it at that level? I'm pretty sure they don't want to go out campaigning, man. BJP versus India, the coalition called. There's a coalition. Everyone, all the opposition parties, they've come together and they have created a coalition called Indian National Developmental Inclusive Alliance to fight. It's safe to say one person, which is Modi, so that he doesn't get third straight election victory. And remember last time when BJP won, they won by 303 seats. And Congress at that time, which was the biggest, the biggest opposition party, got only 52 seats.
Things don't look any better than they did for the Congress 5 years ago. I think BJP is like this big machinery, not just in India, even the Indian diaspora. They've got something called Overseas Friends of the BJP. It's the diaspora parties. You must have probably been dealt with that. So in London, folks in London, they gathered with an Indian flag not too long ago, another flag with a lotus. So they champion BJP's cause. And the American wing of the Overseas Friends of the BJP, they plan to send some 3,000 Indian-American guys to India to put up posters and canvas for the BJP. This is in addition to the RSS of the world in India. And they claim that they will make some 2.5 million calls to people in India to go out there and vote for Modi. This is, and 2.5 million is a big one, because finally it comes down to who comes on the day to vote. And that's pretty much it. Indian diaspora is the biggest one. There's some 18 million Indians living abroad. And the next in line is Mexico with 11.2 million, which is a big gap. And then Russia, 10.8. If you've given up your Indian passport, but you're still an Indian origin guy, there's 32 million of those out there.
They're massive. So what I see here in terms of the perception, everyone is like, they've read about Modi, and the only thing that they read about Modi is what? Hindu nationalist prime minister. Right. So that is a typical story that all the non-Indians here have, is that, oh, yeah, your leader, this is... So his name is taken in the same breath as Netanyahu and all those guys, right? So that is pretty strong in terms... Or rather, sometimes I feel that is only part of the story that is being told, right? I'm really interested in there's just a new article that has been published today by New York Times about 10 years of Modi. Is there an honest... like economic data backed article that I have not come across yet on all what has unemployment is low right now, but the population is also at an all-time high. But in terms of real income, real wages, I was looking for the data for this particular chat, is those things have anecdotally been, it seems high with all this consumerism that is happening in India. This money has to be coming from somewhere, right? The income gap divide is also widening, right? So rich are getting richer, more rich, faster. But the poorer are all, but the lower income, their wages have also increased. Which seems like everyone seems to be happy. Happy bole to content. I mean, that at least growth hai, right? Here in Canada, right now, it's crazy as to how expensive things are. people graduating, this is the first time, or rather in North America itself, this is going to be the first generation where this generation is not going to be better off than the previous generation, which is a scary prospect. And this has never happened before. So people cannot buy houses. People cannot sustain their livelihoods. Like meeting monthly bills is difficult. Just affordability is gone out of the window with inflation, etc. I know houses are so expensive. And it was funny that there was this one article announcing certain relief measures by Justin Trudeau, where how they are introducing a few things to make it easier for rents, for renters to get a place. And the first paragraph was about how things are crazy, how people cannot get an affordable place to live. And everyone is like, boss, you have been in the power for last 8 years. So are you, you know, are you campaigning against yourself, and you're going into election right now? Right. So everyone that we talk to here, there is massive FOMO amongst the Indian diaspora for not being in India.
Oh, really?
Right now, for the last 6 months.
Growing up, we heard of brain drain. Here you're talking about folks wanting to say that we might be better off in India than some of them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. India, definitely. All other states, other countries also. There are people who are from, there are friends I have from Pakistan, etc. They are thinking about going to Dubai. There are people who are coming from Middle East who had come here for a more, because the society is more open, liberal, etc. And they're like, forget liberal, we need to eat. So we are going back, right?
Yeah, but it's not exactly brilliant here in India either, in that, you know, for those farmers, let's talk about the ones who matter really, right? 600 million agriculture workers and farmers depend on agriculture for a living. They are not happy. We've seen them make those long marches to Delhi. One of them was killed in the protests. Modi promised that farm incomes will double by 2024. That hasn't happened. They are demanding minimum support prices because of the monsoon vagaries, because a significant percent of crops still depend on rainfall and not irrigation, because the number of small farmers, the smallholder, I mean, the rich farmers are there. They will get richer, as you said, but the smaller folks, they don't have access to credit. So in from that standpoint, even BJP is very wary of that. And they've backtracked, saying that, hey, don't worry, we are there for you. And they repealed those laws that they had passed 3 years ago, just before the state elections in Uttar Pradesh and a few other states. So I think it is just that cycle. Next 10 years might just be great for India in terms of the consumption bit that you talked about. People will have a little more money in their pockets. The middle class will get relatively richer. The part now to worry about is if everyone will grow at a reasonable pace, that equitable.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, yeah. So that has always been a problem, more so now than before. Stock markets are crazy right now. You know, things are going, you know, really
happening?
Well.
Yeah. It's like, and what people keep on telling me, it's because of the election. It's because of, you know, the impending. But I was like, that should already be.
It's happening in a few other countries as well, not just in India. But it's crazy in that sense. India is richer than what it was a few years ago. Things are better. 92, where India liberalized, to 2024. It's not been like 50, 70, 90, 100 years. In 20 years, obviously, relative to where we were, we are respected in the global markets, the foreign policy, and India can move certain things in terms of decision, whether it's World Trade Organization, our participation in it, or the climate change. We just don't take things lying down. Having said that, some of the antics that Mr. Modi has got going in India, I feel he could do without them. Like, for example, Arvind Kejriwal was arrested. Not that he got him arrested. It's the independent bodies that the ED, Enforcement Directorate, it's a watchdog, financial crimes, wagera dikhta hai, so they arrested him. So Modi saying, hey, it's not me or BJP. Then there are a couple of other Aam Aadmi Party guys who have been arrested some 6 months and 13 months ago, but they are still to undergo a trial, which means they'll be rotting in jails. There are quite a few people like those. There was recently, on March 26th, there were a few guys who were protesting outside Modi's home. They were arrested. Jharkhand chief minister was arrested. He's from...
happened? He was like running around, right?
Yeah. So he resigned just hours before his arrest. So Kejriwal became the first sitting chief minister to have been arrested by the authorities. And this is not a coincidence. This is happening just before the elections now. Kejriwal is in Tihar as we speak.
So why would he bother to do
exactly
this? That's the whole thing. Why bother?
Why bother? Because he will get another thumping majority. He could focus efforts elsewhere. They locked out Congress ka bank accounts, meaning the funds that they need to campaign were frozen. Locked out, man. They were frozen. So that all of that is happening. So in India right now, while India marches ahead.
All these things were happening even before. And now it's gone up, I guess, is what we are hearing. And have you read those polls, which is like, you know, in Freedom of Press Index, India is ranked XYZ number. And Happiness Index, India is ranked somewhere else. And some of those scores are just ridiculous, where India is in sometimes ranking
below Afghanistan
no, or dictatorial countries, completely out and out dictatorial countries. India is being ranked below them by these institutes, which sounds a little bit incredible. I mean,
Indian journalists are safer in war-torn countries than in India, is what the ranking appeared to be. Gauri Lankesh, who was shot in Bangalore in 2016, if I remember correctly, again, for having... So, they're in 17. So, there is some truth to it. How open would you be on this podcast, which will barely hurt the prospects of BJP coming into power? How open would you be to criticize the government? How open would you be? You meaning, I'm talking about general, when you go on Facebook and write, people are wary about posting anything negative about the government because, you know, are chhod yaar, apne ko ye nahi, we don't want to get into trouble. So that's where that freedom of, expression comes in, where you can't have a good joke at the expense of the government because you don't want the headache of being somebody knocking on your door or calling your son up. So that's not exactly healthy, and which didn't happen back in the day.
But back in the day, there was no social media also. No?
Late night show hosts, for example, they were there, right? At least your Shekhar Suman could make fun of a Lalu or a Manmohan Singh. But that's not happening with a Modi or an Amit Shah. I think Indian Express still did a pretty decent job just before the previous elections where they asked him hard questions. So sometimes asking those questions also folks are not doing. So where stand-up comedians have to apologize for jokes. It's a joke, man. Just take, just chill, relax, That part is something that we've somehow lost out on. Of course, you're right. Social media wasn't there back in the day. But we didn't have to worry about these things is what I feel. And I think Modi need not worry about these anyway. Someone like me who's a Modi skeptic, that wasn't the case in 2014 when he got elected because of his other things that he keeps doing, communalism and all of. If he turns that corner, I'll be all for him. He doesn't have to do these things, man. He's too powerful. BJP is way too powerful.
That is true. but yes, that is true. That is true. They just have managed the timing.
It's
all about timing. Right? I mean, Ayodhya Mandir, it's not like it magically came up at the time that it came up.
Yeah,
right?
True. Absolutely. 2014 was good times and ending corruption because Congress was all about corruption. 2019 was the surgical strike, which just happened to come just before the elections. It was about India-Pakistan. And now I think it's back to corruption again because all of these,
It's Ram Mandir.
Ram Mandir. Yeah, you're right.
It was Ram Mandir.
Correct.
It was Ram Mandir.
Ram Mandir.
Right? I think that is politics.
Yeah,
right?
That is.
October surprise in North America is being done for you hold on to things until the last moment where there is no wait for any time. Where people don't have time and recency bias has to be, right?
Correct.
And that carries over into election. So
and then you also have voters, right? Every country's citizens deserve the movies that you get shown and the politicians that get elected. It is a reflection of the times. So that's just the way it is, I guess.
Our priority, Amos, it is all about what are people craving for right now? Mm. I think people are craving for economic development, for progress. I think they are saying I lose X, but I am getting Y, and currently my priority is Y. Right? People don't think 20 years down the line. That's why, nobody invests in, that's why people invest in crypto versus, S&P 500.
Right? Yeah, true. No, that's what I think. One of the politicians had once said, some other country, saying we do not always do the right thing because if we do, we will not get elected. Because what they want to see is immediate returns, something that will come 10 years down the line. We won't be around to see it. And also then you've got the citizens. You remember Brexit? The morning after Brexit, the guys who voted for Brexit were Googling what they voted for, meaning what was the question and what did they get it right. So it's down to the people as well.
It sounded right at the time that I did it. But
man, imagine that.
Those were the topics that we had. We did not get into the nitty-gritties and we ended up talking so much about the candidate itself, or rather Modi. As a leader rather than the election as to and what is going to be happening. It is... Do you want to get into the details?
We'll do that in the next one, because we still have at least two podcasts to go before the elections come in.
Even the American elections, they are paper ballots. Yes. India is electronic ballots. And of course, it's a matter of skill.
Yes, absolutely. True that. Talking about electronic things, and you briefly touched upon people investing in crypto a moment ago. In completely unrelated news, Sam Bankman-Fried was jailed for 25 years after having been accused of a battery of charges. He was the former head of FTX, the crypto exchange. And 18 months ago, he was the king of the world at 29. I know of a common friend of ours who had to get money out of FTX the night before they froze all the accounts. However, I learned that now the company will start the bankruptcy proceedings, and people who invested their principal amounts will get that money back.
Let's see how that is going to happen, because the judge has ordered, but there is no way of doing restitution. The judge also, apart from the 25 years in federal prison, they have asked SBF to pay $11 billion. They have no idea how he's going to do that. Wow. And it is going to be, even after he gets out of the prison, he still owes that money. But yeah, so they don't know how that will happen and when that will happen. Interestingly, this is, again, in terms of white collar crimes, this is not the highest prison sentence awarded, which was for Bernie Madoff, was given 150 years behind bars for the 20 billion Ponzi scheme that he was running. And then Elizabeth Holmes was given 11 years. However, there is another thing, which is it may so be the case where SBF may only serve around 12 and a half years, which is 50% of the sentence. And because of prison reform legislation, which is known as First Step Act, which was actually introduced for people to help minority offenders, who had committed non-violent drug trafficking act. Hmm. So for them, if they do good behavior, they reduce it by 50%. They get up to 54 days of time credit for good behavior for every year, which could result in overall 15%, and then additional First Step Act. So he may be out in around 12 and a half years.
He said that
going to be a bad thing, right? You're 37 odd, 30 odd, and probably has stashed up, you know, Bitcoin somewhere. As long as that doesn't go bust, he's good.
He said, though, that my better part of my productive adult life is gone. That's what he said at the courtroom or some such. Obviously, he's a young person, but yeah, his parents were, constantly clicked by the media. Unfortunately, they have to now just sit and watch their son in jail for the foreseeable future.
The court has asked that they have been recommended, the Bureau of Prisons, that SBF be placed in a medium security or even a lower security facility, whichever they find appropriate. And it has to be as close to San Francisco as possible so that his family can visit him.
Well, while he is behind bars, Bitcoin is breaking all records. 2 years ago, or was it 2021 when we started talking about it? Then we kept mum because it all went into red. It's still a subject that I don't understand. There is a brilliant book called Number Go Up by Zeke Fox. He's a Bloomberg columnist, and he's written an account of why cryptocurrency is hogwash, and he's done a brilliant job at it. He was also on Point Blank. But one part he said, one section of the book says, I will still not bet against Bitcoin, not because it has applications, but because there are enough number of people in the world who believe that it is worth so and so. So it'll continue to, it's like money. It's a 100 rupee note can fetch you an ice cream. Why? Because you believe it too. So faith. So that's how it is. Yeah.
It's a little bit more complex than what you said.
But
I believe this piece of paper can get me something. Then there is something backing that.
Yeah, there
but
is.
But it is. But it's crazy how people immediately come out of the woodworks. And now, you know, every other day now on my LinkedIn thing, there is some crypto post. Oh, this is back and blah, blah, blah. And they're suddenly doing investments again. And these guys were gone for the last couple of years. And now it's back. But yes, it is. I'm up on my Ethereum portfolio, which I had completely forgotten about. And it's doing okay.
Oh, that's good to know. That's good to know. Mine was minus 70 and it is just about doing all right now. So
20-30 up now.
Yeah.
Anyways, those were the topics that we had. That was our episode number 250. And if you... Oh, by the way, another quick update. Google Podcasts, they have decided to shut it down. And this is not, we are recording on April 1st. I hope it was. But they published it like 2 days ago.
So we've got Spotify,
They are moving people to YouTube Music.
Okay.
Which is the annoying thing, right, about Google. They keep on doing these things.
Hey, talking about YouTube, urging all of you guys to follow us on @IndicastTV. That's our YouTube channel where we might just put up... the whole podcast, which is an audio file where you won't get to see each other, see the two of us, or we might just do a 2-minute thing if by just digging into the conversation and something that might be interesting, which will get you to listen to the whole damn thing on Spotify or on YouTube.
This sounds very much like what Facebook does to get people addicted.
Sex. Now that we have your attention, eat at Subway. That was there. Anyway, so @IndicastTV. So that's the one that you should follow. Yes.
And if you are on Twitter or X, please follow us on Indicast as well. And just to subscribe to our podcast, just go and look up theindicast.com. And there are buttons that you can hit to your favorite podcasting apps, including Spotify, that you can listen to us on. And that's about it from me. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.